Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on October 1st of 2008, under the headline, Did Oregon's Biggest River Save the World from Nazism? Here we go. When Franklin D. Roosevelt launched the project to build Bonneville and Grand Coulee dams in Oregon and Washington, respectively, he was thinking about jobs. He had no idea those jobs would, a decade or so later, directly result in the world being saved from the machinations of the crackpot German chancellor by making it possible for America and its allies to challenge and defeat the world's best air force, and quite possibly by forestalling nuclear war. All of that was in the unforeseeable future, though, in 1933 when construction began. Originally, the plan was to build just one dam on the Columbia River. The government settled on Grand Coulee up in Washington State. But the Oregon delegation in Washington, D.C. got very upset about this and begged Roosevelt to change his mind and favor the Bonneville site in Oregon. Figuring two dams would create more jobs than one, Roosevelt gave the green light to both projects. By the end of the 1930s, the dams were in service, churning out electric power that was basically free. A side effect of this was the construction of thousands of homes in Oregon and Washington equipped with notoriously inefficient but easy-to-install electric ceiling heat. Maybe you even live in one of them. If not, it's a pretty good bet that you have at one point. But the two dams generated far, far more power than the U.S. could use in the 1930s. Especially the sparsely populated northwest corner of the U.S. Transmission lines were built, but they could only take the power so far, and electricity can't be stored, not in anything like an efficient manner. It has to be used the instant it's created. It looked like the main benefit of the dams was going to be the thousands of jobs they'd created during the Depression. Two dams weren't doing anything that one dam couldn't have done, and even just one dam wouldn't have done a whole lot more than a grid connection from Hoover Dam might have accomplished for a lot less money, bringing the power up from Colorado. That is, until December 7th, 1941. As you likely know, as the war went on, America's output of war equipment, especially airplanes, got bigger each year until the hapless Axis powers were completely overwhelmed with hostile, to them, tanks, planes, and artillery. By 1945, the output was staggering, and it was topped off with a pair of war-ending nuclear bombings in Japan. The two Columbia River dams played a key role, an irreplaceable role, in all of these things. The seemingly endless electric power was just what America's young aluminum industry needed. Airplanes and their armor were made from aluminum refined in plants very close to the dam. Aluminum requires huge amounts of electricity to extract it from bauxite ore. And it's no coincidence that Hanford, where the bombs used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki were built, is stationed on the Columbia River near the dams. Nuclear weapons research and production requires enormous amounts of electricity. Perhaps these needs would have been sated without the two job creation projects on the Columbia. Perhaps Boeing and Douglas would have gotten their start somewhere in the Midwest, where airplane culture was so much more developed. But also, perhaps, just perhaps, our production abilities would have fallen short of the challenge that was before us, and we would have lost the war. The Germans were chillingly close to developing a working nuclear bomb when they were forced to surrender in 1945. There's some evidence that they would have done so had it not been for some highly skilled Norwegian commandos who snuck in and blew up the Nazis' heavy water refinery in 43. Furthermore, without all those aluminum airplanes flying over Germany and dropping bombs on factories and ore refineries, they might very well have beaten the Allies to it anyway. So did Roosevelt's Make Work project in Oregon save the world? We'll never know for sure, but, you know, that's probably okay. Key sources in this story included works by Bill Gulick and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. You'll also find their visuals to go with today's story and also full citations to the sources for this story. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For the details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do? Drop me a line at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Also, let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with the time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way at around 6 a.m. every weekday morning, so if you're looking forward to the next one already, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.